You're tuned in to Nerd Overload, your weekly show for video games, movies, TV shows, comics, tech news, and more. Now your hosts, Cody Pinnick, Samantha Cross, Sam Dunham, and Josh Harrison.
Hey everybody, welcome to Nerd Overload, everybody's favorite pop and geek culture fun time afternoon program. What? I don't know. I'm Cody.
I'm Sam.
This is Joe.
And I'm Josh.
Oh, thank you all for tuning in. We have a bunch of news to go over with you, but first, let's talk about some things we have been checking out.
Check it out!
Oh, banana!
New clip!
Yeah.
I support that one.
That's a refreshed soundboard.
Refreshed soundboard. Oh, by the way, we also have a special guest in the studio. You might know him from a couple of good games in the 90s and a couple of real bad games ever since. You want to introduce yourself?
I'm Duke Nuke Them.
Oh, I guess I've been mispronouncing it this whole time.
Yeah.
I always thought it was Duke Nukem, but apparently it's Duke Nuke Them.
I'm Duke Nuke Them.
Okay.
I guess that's it. You know, we got to get into the show, but first, I noticed you're kind of walking in. You were kind of holding on to your back. It looked like you kind of injured yourself or something. Did something happen to you before the show?
Those alien bastards held out a football like they wanted me to kick it, but at the last second they pulled it back and the momentum carried me onto my back and it embarrassed me. They'll pay for this.
I'm sorry to hear about that, Mr. Nuke Them.
I'm sorry to hear that.
I'm King Baby. Gotta hail me.
All right. I guess you're just going to kind of hang out here for a bit. And while we do our show, is that correct?
I'm Duke Nuke Them.
All right, that's fine. Okay, so check them out. Who has things that they have checked out? I'll tell you right now, I've been very busy at work, so my check-ems have consisted of watching random clips on YouTube.
You know, that's a lot of my mornings.
That's what I do at work when I'm not working.
I've watched a season and a half of Close Enough.
It's good. It's a great show.
The guy who made Regular Show.
Oh, yeah, that one. We talked about this a little while ago.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I mean, I like it. It's fun.
To refresh everyone's memories, what is the elevator pitch for the show? It's an animated show, right?
Yeah. It's an adult animated show. It's on HBO Max. I mean, it's not as weird as Regular Show all the time. It's mostly about, like, a group of 30-somethings living in L.A.
Mm.
Taking care of their kid.
Yeah, and living with their divorced friends who still live together.
Oh, okay.
And it does start getting Regular Show weird.
It does. There are episodes here and there. Like, I just watched one about a haunted couch.
Yeah. And there's a literal ghost that shows up.
Yeah, he's a French ghost.
Yeah.
Okay, no, this sounds very, very Regular Show-esque.
Yeah. I think the second season is a little more out
weird,
there than
yeah.
the first one was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was like an episode where they meet this genetically enhanced dog boy, and he comes from like a laboratory of all these enhanced animals, and the whole point was this woman wanted to make better animal actors for movies.
Okay, all right.
But like the whole thing of that episode was Josh, the main character, and his best friend Alex. Used to go to Medieval Times every year on this certain day.
Mm-hmm.
But then Alex is trying to pitch this movie he wrote or something, or this show or something. Like,
yeah,
I can't remember.
It's about Vikings because everything's about Vikings with him.
Okay.
He's like a college
professor.
History professor.
Yeah. Mm. And there's a lot of Jim Carrey references in the episode.
Okay.
I mean, it's not the weirdest one, but it's definitely, it feels like it's where it gets really, really weird.
Yeah, it really is just Regular Show set in reality with human 30-somethings and their trials and tribulations. Some of it really hits home, too, as a 30-something adult man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was like one where he's trying to teach his daughter to skateboard or something.
Oh, skate dad.
Skate dad. And I didn't realize that the guy who created the show is the voice of Mordecai and Josh.
Yeah. Oh, sure, yeah.
I never realized it. But then, like, his friend Alex is voiced by the guy who does Jay's the character Jay on Big Mouth.
And that's
all I can hear.
Jason Manzoukas.
Oh, yeah. That guy, yeah.
Yeah, it's all I can hear.
He's on a podcast, How Did This Get Made? It's a bad movie podcast that he does with Paul Scheer.
He's Rex Splode in Invincible, too.
Oh, he is. Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Wow, that's a good fitting for that character. There was a rumor at one point that he was going to be playing young, hip J. Jonah Jameson in the Spider-Man Homecoming movies. Like the new ones, the Tom Holland ones. He was going to be like internet, like pundit screaming.
That's not
podcast
bad.
Podcast guy.
If Jonah Jameson. If you have to age down J. Jonah Jameson and do that wouldn't have been a bad way
because
to do
it. Because he's like that's his shtick is yelling. It's just kind of yelling. So cool.
But I've watched all of the second season and like I didn't like it as much as the first because they're obviously trying to build out their cast like in a Simpsons kind of way.
Oh, sure.
And
yeah.
I'm like, I just kind of want the characters that I liked from before. Can we get some more of those?
I mean, yeah, I like the core characters. Like there's Josh and Emily and their daughter. And then there's Bridget and Alex, the divorced couple. But then there's their landlady, Pearl, who's a retired cop, and her adopted son, Randy, who's this redheaded, shirtless mullet guy.
Yeah. Like, in the second season, we get episodes about Pearl. We get episodes about Randy. We get an episode about their daughter's kindergarten teacher. And I'm like, I don't really want this so much. Like, okay. They weren't bad, but, like, the strong
You can
stuff,
see what they're trying to do is...
Yeah.
Well,
yeah
there's, like, yeah. a whole episode with the daughter, and it's all about her stealing hot sauce packets from home and selling them at school.
Oh, yeah. She becomes, like, a Scarface-style drug lord of hot sauce packets.
Okay.
Calls herself Sauce Face.
Yeah.
Nice.
The whole thing is her and her best friend wanted to buy a drone.
Oh, okay. Huh.
But the school is, like... It's a very expensive school.
Which is part of the reason why they have to live with two roommates.
Gotcha. Because they wanted their daughter to go to a good school.
A good school. Gotcha. Interesting.
And their teacher's like this kind of bohemian...
Touchy-feely man bun guy.
Yeah.
Oh, gotcha.
And so they're like there's a bunch of banned foods in the cafeteria, and one of them is hot sauce for sensitive palates, as the sign says.
Ah, gotcha. That actually reminds me a little bit. So, you know the comic strip PVP at Scott
Oh,
Kurtz
I remember
does,
that. Yeah,
I haven't read that in a long time.
They did a 20-year time jump.
Oh, God.
To the future where Francis, the young, like, 19-year-old kid that worked in their office is now like 40 and is running the office.
Oh.
And they've introduced a whole new cast of characters, including the main character Jade and Brent's daughter is now the main character of the thing where she just started working at PVP. And they have a man bun. Their HR department is like guy man bun man that says namaste and offers people tea in lieu of like actually doing actual HR work.
That's kind of like how this kindergarten teacher is.
Yeah, yeah. And it just kind of reminded me, you know, that type of character is prevalent in a lot of different like forms of media. You spread out the cast far enough in any kind of given media, you'll see that type of character
you'll
show up. You'll hit man bun. Well, like even Harry Potter, the future fortune telling teacher Trelawney.
Oh yeah, yeah, Professor Trelawney.
Yeah, what's she was played by? It was someone famous.
I don't know.
Yeah, Josh, look it up. But
I've dropped all Harry Potter knowledge from my brain.
The bits and pieces stick with it, but she is like the hippy dippy, like, you know, lives in a van down by the river when she's not teaching at Hogwarts, kind of thing. But it's someone famous that you wouldn't have expected to take such a small part in.
Well, in the book, her character had a lot more
Well, to do. But the but in the movies, you know, you have to cut it down to cut an entire book down to 2.5 hours or whatever.
Not everybody can Peter Jackson it.
Yeah, that's true.
I was never a fan of the Harry Potter movies.
Really?
Just couldn't get into them.
I liked them. The one thing that I kind of resent from those movies is now when I think of the characters from the book, when I'm forced to think of the characters from the book, my brain immediately goes to pretty much what the actors from the movie look like. Whereas before, it kind of gave a little wider idea of what
it poisoned your imagination
a little bit, and that's you know, that's kind of sad when the whole point of these books is to kind of open up imagination and that sort of thing. Now you think of Harry Potter and you don't think of wild crazy hair that can't, you know, do whatever. You see
Daniel Radcliffe
with his, you know, combed down hair or whatever. It's
Emma Thompson,
yeah, an actress that is much bigger. You wouldn't think would take a smaller role like that.
Yeah, and talking about like the whole thing, like once you see a movie about a book and then you go back and read the book or something and all you see is the actors or hear the actor's voice or whatever.
That happens all the time.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's like the same thing with me. It's like whatever, like you read about Snape and in the book he's got a long crooked nose and a beard. But when I picture him, I just see Alan Rickman.
Yeah.
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 But that's okay because Alan Rickman.
Oh, yeah.
Rules,
yeah.
But yeah. Yes.
Hello, Mr. Potter.
Oh, that was another episode of Close Enough. Was a whole take on Die Hard.
Oh, nice!
It's a whole Die Hard episode.
Nice.
Josh's wife's Emily's work, which is like some big food corporation.
I've been putting a lot of time into Monster Hunter lately.
Oh, you have? Okay.
I don't think I talked about it last time because
you didn't have a chance to. Yeah. Yeah,
the new one?
Yeah, it's really good. I'm really enjoying it. They streamline a lot of parts of it that were annoying before. Mm-hmm. Like, instead of having to craft potions and do it, it'll automatically do it for you as you collect the items.
Oh, that's cool.
So yeah, instead of having to make a potion, if you get an herb and whatever else, it automatically mixes it for you and adds it to your... You get a dog that comes with you, and you can ride said dog.
Yeah, so what's your dog's name?
I named it after my actual dog, so it's TJ.
TJ, nice. Okay, cool.
But you can run across the map on the dog, and it doesn't eat away at your stamina. It's kind of like your fast travel
a little bit, right?
Yeah.
More or less.
And you don't have to do stuff like... before, you'd have to track the monster you were hunting. You had to throw a paintball at it so you could know where it was at all times. Now they just tell you it's fine.
And that's cool. Yeah, no, that's awesome. It gets you to the fighting monster part of things a little quicker, right?
Yeah, it's much more approachable, I think, than the other ones have been. I mean, it's still the same kind of I don't want to say stiff combat, but Monster Hunter combat has a very specific feel to it.
And it's been ingrained into the title for so long that if they tried to change it, there'd be a lot of hardcore players that would be like, oh, this feels too loose.
It wouldn't be Monster Hunter if it wasn't this very specific
way of fighting.
Yeah. How does it look on the Switch? That was one thing I was a little worried about when they originally announced it, because I mean, I love my Switch, but its graphical output is not it's not the beefiest.
It's fine.
Okay.
It's not great. I mean, it doesn't look like Monster Hunter World.
Of course.
But it looks fine.
Okay.
It looks like Monster Hunter.
I am honestly surprised they didn't announce some sort of Switch Pro or Super Nintendo Switch or something like that. To coincide with this title, to take advantage of kind of the beefier graphics. To be honest, I think that's what they're waiting on with Breath of the Wild 2.
Probably.
I still think Super Switch would be a really dope name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bought Samantha a copy too, so we've both been playing it.
Oh,
so
nice.
This is a multiplayer and it's fun.
Nice, nice.
It's a good game. I've enjoyed it a lot. I've always kind of liked Monster Hunter, but not been a huge diehard or anything.
Yeah.
But I think I've gotten more out of this one than I have the previous ones.
Cool. I considered picking it up briefly. I still have a couple of games on my backlog that I want to try to get through before I go and invest in another one. But this sounds awesome. I might have to put it on the list, down the road.
And they very clearly delineate what quests you can do by yourself and what ones are multiplayer.
Okay, cool.
Which is nice. Before, that was kind of like, is this something I can handle myself? Am I going to get my butt kicked? But like, now that I think the onboarding process and the linear quest path is clearer and and better balanced than it has been.
Well, good. That's awesome. That's awesome. I'm glad the game's good. Like I said, I might pick it up down the road. You know, by the time everyone stops playing it, that's when I'll go ahead and pick it up. And I'll never be able to finish those two multiplayer, you know, whatever.
Well, that's okay. There's nothing on the release list that's coming out.
That's true.
I guess Pokemon Snap, but honestly, I don't know if I'm going to get Pokemon Snap.
I probably will. I think I will. I'm excited for it. I never really played the first one all that much. I think I rented it once
from the Blockbuster.
That's all you really need. Yeah, it was very it was a short game. But yeah, I'm kind of interested in it, and I'm interested to see if they integrate any of that, any of Snap into like the Pokemon Home system or anything like that. Like you can transfer pictures of things.
I did read that Japanese convenience store chain Lawson's is going to have Pokemon Snap printing stations.
Oh, no way.
Like American Blockbuster had.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. I actually saw on Twitter one of the guys, the Amiibo News or Amiibo Alerts. They've turned into pretty much Nintendo Wire. I think they're associated with them. It's a Nintendo fan site or whatever.
Yeah.
And the guy actually bought one of the old Blockbuster printing stations and modded it so that he can hook his Switch up to it and play his Switch on the CRT inside it, and when you take a picture in game, it will print out a really crummy, I mean it's terrible,
the stupid little stickers,
but it will print out the sticker from the CRT, whatever's on the CRT screen from the Switch, so you can conceivably play new Pokemon Snap on old hardware and take crummy pictures just like
when we were kids.
Nintendo 64. Yeah, that's great. It's great.
I remember seeing the station at Blockbuster.
I remember seeing it too.
But I never actually used it. Same. Even though I had the game.
Yeah. I kind of got a wild hair a little while ago and went on eBay just to see if those things are still even available. And if you know how to build it, you can probably get one because they're all like in parts.
Huh.
Mm.
Yeah, you can't buy one like full, but you can get like, you can get the marquee, and then you can get like some of the internal guts and a roll of the paper and stuff like that. And if you can build it, it's available. It's out there.
If you build it, no one will come.
No one will come.
Feels like eBay just is just a source for like, you know, for DIY Blockbuster.
Yeah.
You eventually have all the parts. You build your own Blockbuster.
Yeah.
It's like when people build DeLoreans.
You know, there's a documentary that I've been wanting to watch.
Did you watch that?
I haven't watched it yet.
The Last Blockbuster.
Yeah, The Last Blockbuster. I really need to watch it.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's way overly positive about Blockbuster.
Sure. I mean, at the end of the day, it was still a business and it was still kind of, you know.
Like, I don't remember. I don't have, I have nostalgic feelings for Blockbuster, but, like, I remember it being, like, the Blockbuster was the one that kind of sucked.
Everyone went to Hollywood Video in town.
Like, Blockbuster was the one that was the big corporation that kind of sucked.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. No, I agree. Well, yeah, once upon a time, they were kind of the big crummy one. They're the Walmart of video rental places.
Yeah, exactly. And this documentary doesn't touch on any of that.
No, it was just it's rose-colored.
It was the magical video land where you could rent whatever you wanted.
Yeah.
You know, thinking back, like, when I was younger, there were all kinds of video rental places.
Around town?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, like I just said, Hollywood Video is the one we went to more times than not.
The one we always went to a lot when I was a kid, when I moved to Marion anyway, from Big Island, was it's a church now, but it's over there by Mega Moo, right there on Fairground Street.
Yeah, that's Hollywood
Video.
Was
that Hollywood?
That's Hollywood Video.
We would go to Dave's on the other side of town.
Okay, yeah.
Next
you guys
to
would
where
be
kind of
closer than that. Yeah. Yeah, Dave's is a good one.
They had so many Super Nintendo games, like a ridiculous amount.
Oh, yeah.
We would go there, or there was just one in Prospect.
Oh, I remember that one.
It was Jay's video in downtown Prospect.
Yep.
That's how prevalent the video rental stores were, that a three-horse town, like, is that a phrase?
One horse town.
A one horse town like Prospect had one.
Mary is like a three horse town.
Yeah.
No, I think Morrill had a video rental place briefly as well. It was inside the it was like an ice cream shop and a little thrift store.
That's kind of how the one in Big Island was. It's like right, it was right on the drag of like 309 or whatever.
Was it Al's?
Yeah, I think actually
Al's is still around. They just don't have.
In the back they had
pizza and thrift store now.
Yeah, in the back they had, you know, video game rental and movie
pizza
rental
and thrift store and thrift pizza.
Thrifty pizza.
Goodwill pizza.
If your pizza has the matching color tag for the day, you get extra percent off.
You get half price.
Yeah, it's half price.
Half price pizza Wednesdays.
And it smells kind of weird.
Yeah.
The video store was a low risk investment, I think.
Yeah,
back in the day.
It definitely felt like it was like that was the turnkey business of the 90s.
Oh, sure.
Video rental. Kind of like how car washes are now.
Yeah. Kind of, yeah.
But to be fair, despite whatever entertainment format you have, everyone's going to have a car that needs washed, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I used to love going to the movie rental.
Until I invent my car washing drone.
Calm down there, Jeff Bezos. Yeah.
It's like you pay on the app, and then the drone flies to your house and washes your car.
It down.
And hoses it down from the air.
It's a team of four drones.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Yep. Getting back to the video rental, I loved going to video rental places as well. I mean, I worked there. I worked at Family Video for like a year and a half. Like a couple years. No, it's a couple years. It was a while.
Yeah.
I worked there. And I loved it. I love going to the places like that and kind of looking at all the covers and going, wow, what is this movie about, and then never renting them.
I mean, that's kind of like how it was when I worked at the bookstore. It was like I'd see all these books and I'm like,
this looks great, I'm not gonna read it.
Nope.
Yeah,
sure, judging books by covers. a solid thing to do or
seeing like a literal 6-foot block of the Boxcar Kids.
Oh,
spines,
yeah.
And yep. Stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
What do you do?
Babysitter's Club.
Find a book that I want to read, and then I see it on Amazon, and I'm like, oh, it's only like $6. And then I buy it, and then I put it on a shelf, and then I never
read it.
And
then that's it, yeah.
I did start reading the Ask Iwata book came out like a couple days ago.
Nice, okay.
That's just kind of like a memoir on Satoru Iwata and his life and Mr. Itoy, and Shigeru Miyamoto write a little bit about him in it too, and I've only read like the first 10 pages, but it's interesting, and like he seemed like he was such a good dude, and it's such a shame that he died so young.
Yeah,
Satoru Iwata, the former president of Nintendo.
Yeah No, that's interesting. Yeah. You have to let me know, keep me updated on that book, because that, you know, that sounds interesting.
I'll let you borrow it when I'm done.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. You know what? Let's go ahead and take a break here. And when we come back, we'll get into some news. Hey, we're back. That was Superman by the band Goldfinger. No real reason to play this one. I guess we have like a skateboarding game that we're going to talk about here in a bit.
And that's the best song on the Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 soundtrack.
Yeah. It also fills the ska quotient for the quarter. So we're good there. We're good until the summer. And then I'll have to find some like real big fish or something to fill in. So anyway, let's go ahead and get into some news.
So tasty. There it is.
So tasty. I put it in specifically for you, Cody. I put in so tasty. Oh, Duke Nukem is, or I'm sorry, Duke Nuke Them is, look like are you packing stuff up? Are you getting ready to go or something?
My friend Rick is having his birthday party at Dave and Buster's.
Oh, okay. So do you have to go now or, oh no, he's out the door. Shoot. Okay. Well, I guess we'll see Duke Nuke Them a little bit later on in the show, maybe. So anyway, let's talk about some news.
I'm glad he got his ride fixed after those alien bastards blew it up.
Yeah, right? All right, so yeah, I guess the big news here this week, Nintendo had one of their Indie World directs where they
Indie World.
Yeah, right, yeah, air like quote, Indie World.
It's like a Nintendo Direct, but everybody is extra unhappy with it afterwards.
Yeah. So I actually didn't even watch this one. So Cody, you're going to have to take lead on this. What are some of the highlights this Indie World? Because we're not going to talk about everything in it because there's no point to talk about everything.
I watched it and it was a good presentation. There's nothing Nintendo specific related because it's about indie games.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote down some of the ones that I thought were interesting. So sorry if I skipped something.
Okay. Well, whatever. No, it's fine. No apologies. Yeah. This is apology free zone here.
We'll start Fez, the indie darling 2D, 3D game Fez by Phil Fish is getting ported to the Switch, which is
I thought that said Foz.
Oh no, it's Fez. the game where you're a little white guy with a fez and you can rotate the world in three dimensions.
Kind of like a Paper Mario?
Yeah, it's very similar to the Super Paper Mario.
Interesting.
But more puzzle.
Because I'd heard about Fez years ago, but it's cool that it's coming to the Switch finally. It seems like a good fit.
It's an old indie. One of the original, like, from the indie boom games.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It's pretty old.
Covered quite heavily in that indie game, the movie documentary that came out.
Oh, yeah. You know, right.
Probably way long ago than it feels like.
For sure. Well, because time is immaterial.
Yeah.
And we're old.
And what's not coming to the Switch is Fez 2 because it's never coming out. Because Phil Fish got mad at gamers.
Oh, really?
For being gamers and said, well, fine, I'm never making it.
I'm going to take my toys and go home.
He did. It was a legit game that they were working on. And he just got upset and was like, fine. Never happening now.
Oh wow, that's a bummer.
Yeah, which is what seems weird. It's weird that they would bother to port Fez 1.
Yeah. Huh.
Unless he's had time to cool off, maybe?
No, not Phil Fish.
No. I don't know the guy. I don't know.
But yeah, I just thought that was weird that it was coming to it was interesting that it was getting a port.
Mm-hmm.
Another one was a game called The Longing, which is like a platform adventure game that takes place over 400 real-time days. And I can't decide if it's like an interesting concept or the worst thing I've ever heard.
Something incredibly tedious.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's incredibly tedious.
You play as a little shade creature that lives underground that's waiting 400 days for his king to rise
up
again. And like you decide what he does to pass the time during those 400 real-time days.
Wow, that's...
Yeah,
I thought Animal Crossing was bad.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I can't decide, like, if that is interesting or not.
That's wild, yeah.
Because I would forget about it.
Oh, I would too, absolutely.
Yeah, I'd play it a lot for 2 weeks, and then, you know, I wouldn't come back for 800 days. Because that's over a year.
Yeah, it is, yep. Oh, man. So you also have Ollie Ollie World up here on the board. I remember Ollie Ollie as a skateboarding game.
Yeah, it was a 2D platformer skateboarding game.
Yeah, that I was very bad at.
Yeah, it's like Tony Hawk but flat.
Yep.
The new one's Ollie Ollie World, and it's kind of like a story based with a fun art style version of Ollie Ollie.
It's like I saw a thing about it, and it said like it's Tony Hawk in Adventure Time.
Yeah, it has a whimsical look to it, and it's an interesting direction to take the Ollie Ollie format in.
Hmm. Okay. Were there any other major ones that you wanted to talk about?
Getsu Fumaden is a game by Konami, who isn't really an indie publisher,
that is stretching the definition of indie pretty far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On top of it, it is a remake or a reimagining.
It's a sequel.
Or a sequel. A sequel. A sequel to
a Japanese Famicom game that we never got.
Yeah, an original NES game by Konami is getting a modern day sequel on the Switch.
Oh, weird. Okay.
I never heard of this original game, so I got interested and went back to check it out because late 80s Konami game. That's like their heyday.
That's like, yeah, that's
gold. So I'm like, I'll have to go check this out. And it's a pretty interesting game, actually.
Okay, what is it?
It's kind of like in between a Zelda 2 and I want to say like a Castlevania.
Oh, interesting.
So there's
okay.
an overworld map that you move around on, and you drop into these side-scrolling levels where you fight bad guys to collect money to use at shops and like...
Interesting. Okay.
And then, I kept playing, and then there's like third-person, like, well, it's more first-person dungeons that you have to go through, too. And they're like those old-style RPG game dungeons where like...
You just see the front, the wall, like,
yeah.
directly ahead.
And you kind of move space by space, and like, you pretty much have to draw a map to be able to figure it out. But it was interesting to see that come out of nowhere.
Interesting. Wow, okay.
And there's random battles that happen where you're, like, over your shoulder swinging the sword at monsters coming at you.
Huh.
Like, it's really weird and unique, and I played it for a couple hours.
Oh, wow. No, that's interesting. And this sequel is retaining a lot of that.
Don't
a lot
know.
Of that stuff,
all
or...
they showed was side-scrolling hack and slashing.
Oh, yeah. Really? Okay.
But it had a really interesting art style. The NES game is honestly, it's kind of ugly because it's trying to translate that like
Japanese folk art
look, and it doesn't work in 8-bits. But in this new game, it looks pretty cool.
Hmm. Oh yeah, it looks like straight up like out of like Japanese like wood block.
Oh, interesting.
But yeah, you're fighting a bunch of like you're a samurai and you're fighting a bunch of like Japanese yokais
yeah,
and things
like
that.
Really weird looking yokai. And that's how they are in the NES game too, except it looks real bad.
But it also looks
colors.
Like it also yeah. looks like though you get like a couple different, like in the new one, it looks like you get a couple different weapons you can use that have different abilities.
That's in the original game.
Oh, too. Is it?
Yep.
Okay. And then like it... All the bosses are kind of like kind of name dropped like big Japanese monsters like Raijin and Fujin are there. And there's like a big bone dragon monster thing. It looks like just a big spinal cord with an evil skull on it.
OK,
now I'm now a fan of a franchise I had no idea existed until a couple days ago.
OK, cool.
Oh, and they're big, like, one more thing after when they act like they're wrapping up, but then there's one more thing was Oxenfree 2, which the first Oxenfree is a cool game. It's kind of like a point-and-click adventure game with platformer elements that had a really good story and really good dialogue system that really let you kind of mold who your character was by what they said. And I'm excited to see more of it. It was a good game.
Cool. Well, all right. Yeah, that's kind of our wrap up for the Nintendo Indie World. I mean, I'm sure there were some other game, you know, there's probably some other games there. But no, those all sound pretty cool. Those all sound pretty, pretty neat. So yeah, let's go ahead and move on to some other stuff here on the list. Let's do a couple of quick hits here. Here's one from last week. We didn't get a chance to talk about this last week, but remember how about a year ago or 6 months ago, we said that former president of Nintendo of America and creator of the Bigfoot Pizza, Reggie Fils-Aimé, went on to the board of directors for GameStop. Well, apparently that was a very short-term thing because he pulled his ripcord and is parachuted out of that trash fire.
He fixed it.
Yes.
The stocks went up, you know? He fixed it. It was all Reggie.
Yeah, no, he...
And definitely not Reddit.
Yeah, no, he went in to try to fill his bags full of cash, and then, oops, all of a sudden their stock went up, so he stayed on probably a little longer than he was planning, but no, he finally decided, no, I've done everything I can here.
Yeah, he hardcore bailed.
It's like that.
My work here is done.
But you haven't done anything.
Yeah.
It's that Sailor
the tuxedo
Moon,
mask.
The tuxedo mask Sailor Moon meme, yeah.
Or I thought you were doing the Leonard Nimoy on The Simpsons.
Oh, yeah, that too. My work here is done.
But you didn't do anything.
And he, like, teleports away.
He beams away.
Oh, my dad watched a documentary that I've been meaning to check out, probably for next week. Apparently, there is a documentary on Netflix about Leonard Nimoy.
That was
directed by his son.
Oh, well, yeah, I think we talked about it briefly.
About three quarters of the way through filming is when he passed away. So it kind of took a shift in tone a little bit for the tail end of it. Apparently, I haven't had a chance to watch it, but it sounds really good.
I feel like it'll really make me sad.
Well, that too. Yeah, that's probably why I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, I didn't think about that, but yeah, that would. I don't know if I'd watch that.
Yeah.
It's like that Mr. Rogers documentary that was supposedly really good, and it made everybody cry.
And
I would really like to see that, but I also really don't want to cry.
Really don't want to cry. Yeah, no. When I watch things, I typically want to be uplifted and enjoy things, and not be brought down and be made.
Are
sad.
You not entertained?
Because I was a big Mr. Rogers kid.
Oh, me too.
When I was a child.
Me
I think
too.
I think we all were. Yeah. I think it's like that's a cornerstone of our childhoods.
Yeah, but like our generation might be one of the last ones. I mean, it might be maybe the decade after us as well. Like kids who are like mid to late 20s might be the last generation of Mr. Rogers kids. After that, they get that horrible Daniel Tiger. Because that was a spinoff of his.
He had nothing to do with.
No, he had nothing to do with it. But it's awful. It's a mockery of his name.
So anyway, other Netflix news. Let's do that.
Oh yeah. Knives Out is getting a sequel.
I thought it was more than one.
Multiple sequels. Yeah, you're right.
Netflix is like pulling their money and like, hey, this movie was popular,
and they're getting direct to Netflix sequels, which is kind of a double edged sword because I love the characters from Knives Out, especially Daniel Craig's
Daniel Tiger.
Daniel Tiger from the movie Knives Out. No, I really like Daniel Craig's character. I forget what his name was.
I still haven't watched the movie.
Oh, it's super good. You need to.
Yeah, it's a really good movie.
Yeah, you really need to watch it.
I've seen that movie. Come on.
But
Guy LaDouche.
Now I want to go watch Mystery Science.
Most Extreme Elimination Challenge. They have a Twitch channel.
Oh, really?
That only plays Most Extreme Elimination Challenge.
Oh, that's awesome.
Does it play actual Most Extreme or is it a Takeshi's Castle?
It's actually Most Extreme.
Oh, man.
Nice.
Some of their jokes, they don't hold up over time.
I'm sure they don't.
Probably not. But no, I'm excited for more sequels of Knives Out, but I kind of wished they would go to a wider release. I understand theaters are not quite where they were when Knives Out was originally released, but it feels like it's kind of being relegated to kind of the back shelf a little bit, and it deserves better than that, I feel.
But at the same time, you know, everybody and their brother has a Netflix.
That's true. And Netflix does make quality. They do. When they put their money behind something, they do make quality.
As long as it's not a live-action anime adaptation.
Well,
or a live-action adaptation of something else.
Well, yeah, that's true. But, kind of a double-edged thing there. But more Knives Out. I'm here for it. That's cool.
There's a couple Netflix news on here, actually.
Yeah.
The guy who made Kong Skull Island is directing a live-action Gundam movie for Netflix.
Yeah, Jonathan Vaught Roberts, I believe is the guy's name. But yeah, he is directing a live-action Gundam. Benoit Blanc, that's his name.
Mm.
Benoit Blanc from Knives Out.
Oh, okay.
Not Guy Lafleur or whatever.
sure, that's what I said.
Yeah, that's what you said. Yes. But live-action Gundam. I have no
attachment
or context for Gundam. I know big robot and space
and war crimes.
Space Germans, and that guy has a dumb hat, and that's like all I know.
Yeah, that's what I know about the Gundams. The robots look cool.
Yeah.
I've never seen a Gundam robot and been like, that's dumb looking.
Not even Big Zam?
You gotta have Big Zam.
Hate Big Zam. Stupid big UFO with legs.
Yeah, I understand the show actually had a lot of like war is bad like subtext to it.
Oh yeah.
That goes over the heads of children who just go, ooh, look, big robot. big robot with sword and gun and shield?
It depends on the robot, honestly. Okay. The original Gundam had lots of weapons.
Ah, gotcha.
It had a shield, it had a you know, lightsaber.
It had a young child who knew how to pilot it simply by reading the instruction manual.
Yeah, but his dad also made it. Anyway.
Anyway, you are the Gundam man. You are the gun man.
The anime I like, the kid doesn't like to pilot the robot.
Yeah, he has to be forced to be in the robot. Yeah.
He has to be blackmailed by his father. Yeah. Get in the Gundam, Armoro, or I'll make somebody else do it.
Or I'll make Niles do it. Being a Gundam man,
I mean, they've done a live action Gundam before and it was terrible. It was like one of those direct, like Sunrise made it, and it was like one of those direct to DVD really awful CGI messes.
Oh yeah, well that's what this might be. But
yeah,
it's also being written by the guy who did Saga and Why the Last Man, two really really good comic books.
Oh yeah,
so
Saga's good stuff.
Yeah, so maybe it'll be good. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't think they've announced what era of Gundam it's going to fit into. If it is going to be any particular era,
is it Seed?
I hope not.
Is it Wing?
Is it SD? Is that the tiny chibi ones?
Yeah,
SD Gundam, super deformed.
Yeah.
Oh, I hope they don't like Americanize the robot designs and we get like Gundam by way of Pacific Rim.
Well, isn't there, again, I don't know much about this, but I have seen some designs of some of Big Robot because Big Robot. Wasn't there a season where every nation had their own specific one?
That was G-Gundam.
G-Gundam, and there was like one from Sweden that was like a windmill robot. And there was the one from Mexico that wore a poncho and sombrero.
It's like Punch Out.
Yeah, it kind of is.
Yeah, that one was called Tequila Gundam.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah, in that
Gundam
one.
Gundam Popinski.
In that one.
Yes.
In that one, it wasn't so much like you were a pilot. It was more like the robot was an extension of you because it was like basically it mimicked your movements. It was kind of like karate superpower fight Gundam versus this is a war machine tank kind of thing.
I hope that's the one they make.
I vaguely remember that because it's on Toonami.
Yeah, and every nation had its own little space colony, and every nation had its own themed Gundam.
Do you think this is what the Gundam that influenced Pacific Rim, because every nation had their own special design of robot?
Maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I can see that, yeah.
Yeah, like the only one that didn't really look like a racial stereotype was the Hero Gundam.
Of course. Well, that's fine.
That one just looked like a Gundam.
Was America's Gundam like a big cheeseburger or something?
I don't know. Honestly, it was probably a cowboy.
Probably a cowboy. Yeah.
Blonde big boob lady. That's usually the way Japan goes with it.
Yeah.
Britain's Gundam I really liked. It was called Royal Gundam, and it looked like one of those British guards.
Oh, with the big hat?
With the big hat.
Big dumb hat. Yeah.
See, I would have just put arms on Big Ben.
There we go. Yeah. There we go.
And now you're just making me think of the building transformer from oh god, what was that? The Santa Claus. Yeah, that stupid building transforming robot.
Yep.
I just don't want the Gundams to look like gritty and dirty and like have it be too dark. Lighting wise dark, not story wise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause that's what we do here in America is we make everything dark.
And hard to see.
I am concerned. My only concern is, you know, one of the last live action American adaptations of an anime that Netflix did was Death Note. And that was a steaming pile of awful.
And had good source material.
I will take your word for it. I don't know the source material, but I know.
Death Note is a good shit. Well, it goes on too long. But like,
Once you hit a certain point, I don't care anymore.
Once I hit a certain point, I stopped watching it. But like the first maybe season and a half or whatever, really, really good stuff.
Oh, yeah. I have watched Death Note two times now.
Yeah, they start adding a bunch of characters out of nowhere that don't add anything, and like,
nope.
Yeah, then that's about the time where you drop out. But before that, some of the best anime you can watch.
Sometimes. I mean, sometimes it's really over the top. The best thing that came out of that live action adaptation of Death Note was William Dafoe as Ryuk the Shin Megami.
And I mean, they really didn't even have to put CG on him.
No.
He just has that face.
Nope, and that voice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Switching from giant robots that punch thing to people who pilot giant robot that punch thing, we're going to talk about Power Rangers for a minute.
All right.
I thought you were going to talk about giant ladies that punch thing, but
that's what we're going to. That's the last one. We're leaving that for the end. This is a very quick one, but Power Rangers Battle for the Grid, the fighting game that is out on just about every system, and it's surprisingly good, despite it. I mean, it. Power Ranger games are
despite what it is.
Listen, I love Power Rangers. I love Super Sentai.
Their video games are terrible.
Their video games are historically bad.
Even the Japanese ones.
Even the Japanese ones. They're all bad. But the people that developed this game, a lot of them were developers and top ranked players from Marvel vs. Capcom, like MVC 2 and MVC 3. So it's basically a versus game, but with Power Ranger characters. And they are getting official crossovers with Capcom in the form of Ryu and Chun-Li from Street Fighter gaining the powers of the Power Rangers and becoming Crimson Hawk Ranger and Blue Phoenix Ranger.
Yep.
Does this make them doubly good at karate?
It actually does. Ryu looks like a super beefy Green Ranger, but with a white costume.
Red Ranger.
Well, his costume's white.
Yeah.
But he has the Green Ranger shield, like shoulder shield.
Oh, yeah.
And his helmet has ties on the back, so he can actually tighten his helmet.
He even grabs the headband ties on the back and pulls them like he does.
But he just has all of Ryu's moves. Like, he has the Shoryuken, he has the Hadouken. He has the Hadouken. His EX Hadouken is actually a firebird that flies out and hits three times back and forth.
Nice.
He can do an air Hadouken at an angle, which is something he really couldn't do in any other game. Like, he
straight up just Kamehameha's people.
This is maybe like the best version of Ryu we've gotten in a while. It's definitely better than the Street Fighter V version.
What about the Switch, or what about the Smash Brothers version?
You know what? It's actually kind of comparable to the Sash of the version.
He's good in Smash.
He's good in Smash. Well, the thing is with this this version, so in Battle for the Grid, instead of having like directional inputs along with moves, they just have the four face buttons are different. It's like 1, 2, 3 and special, basically. And then you can press forward or back to get, you know, different variations on it. They've done a special thing with Ryu and Chun-Li where you can also input
their
Street Fighter directional inputs to get slightly
better
versions of their moves, just like in
Smash
Brothers.
They stole the idea from Sakurai.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Also, in comparison to other Power Ranger, like other Power Ranger / Sentai characters, Ryu is jacked.
He's huge. He's like double the width of a lot of the other characters.
His arms and legs are bigger than every Power Ranger.
Oh yeah,
ever.
As it should be. Now, it's funny because these two characters were originally part of one of those Bat in the Sun live action like mini movies that they used to do.
Yeah.
Where they would get Jason David Frank to show up and. You know,
I remember he fought
fight like
I remember
Scorpion
he fought
or
Scorpion. I remember when he fought Scorpion.
There was a two-parter where they fought. It was Lord Zedd gave power to M. Bison, and the Power Rangers were having trouble fighting them. So then Zordon gave Ryu and Chun-Li power coins and allowed them to morph. From there, those characters showed up in Enway, the developer company's other Power Rangers game for mobile. Legacy
Wars.
I
remember when that happened. Yeah.
There were a whole bunch of Street Fighter characters that crossed over. You can get Guile, you can get you can get Blanca.
But that game wasn't bad either.
It's not bad.
But
yeah.
But I thought Ryu and Chun-Li were the only ones in their version that actually had Power Ranger powers.
Right. The other ones were just straight up
Street Fighter
characters.
Yeah.
But so Ryu and Chun-Li were able to turn into Power Rangers in that, and then they're crossing over into this. Most folks are pretty excited about this, from what I can tell. The only complaint I've seen online is that there are an awful lot of Power Rangers that are not in this game that could have taken precedence over Ryu and Chun-Li.
That is kind of a good point.
There's maybe only 10% of all of Power Ranger characters in the game that's playable currently.
But also, there are 500 million Power Rangers.
That's true. That's true. But the argument is they could have possibly used characters that play similarly to Ryu and Chun-Li and just kind of copied them over a little bit. Well, like Wild Force Moon Ranger, the Purple Ranger. He plays like Sagat,
mm-hmm.
but he's not Sagat because they put him on a smaller model with a purple Power Ranger suit.
Yeah.
This weirdly feels like Ryu and Chun-Li slumming it, too.
A little bit.
Because, like, they're from a fighting game.
Yeah.
Like, and this is just another fighting game.
I would say that, except Street Fighter is not nearly as big now as it was back then. There was a joke online that someone made that went... that said, wow, that guy from Fortnite is now in a good fighting game. And I know it's a joke, but there's more truth to it than I'd like to admit.
Fortnite. Speaking of which, Fortnite picked up Aloy from Horizon Zero Dawn the other day.
Oh, wow.
So she is in Fortnite now.
Oh, yeah. Didn't they add a bow to the game now, I think?
There's mechanical stuff.
Yeah, because they're doing season where there's item crafting or something.
I don't know. Also, I guess on April 1st, they introduced the Stonks guy.
Oh, the Stonks meme guy.
Yeah, his
that
name
guy. Diamond Hands.
Diamond Hans. Diamond
Hans, yeah.
I still think they need to add Jill of the Jungle from the game Jill of the... Because that's an epic game.
It's an epic game, yeah.
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 And that guy still, Tim Sweeney, the guy that made that, is still the CEO of Epic. So, and like, he has to remember that Jill of the Jungle exists.
Right.
I mean, if Rare can remember...
Battletoads.
No. Well, yeah, but...
Battletoads, yeah.
I was going to say Sir Arthur from Black Witch and from one of their original games and throw him in Sea of Thieves.
Sure.
I mean,
they keep naming people Saber.
Yeah. Saber Wolf.
Saber Wolf. Yeah.
Saber Wolf and Saber Man.
Saber Man. Yep. Okay. So last thing, we're kind of running out of time, but there was a trailer for Resident Evil Village, or I guess it's Resident Evil
7?
8
Village. So yeah. And a demo as well. So yeah.
Well, it'll be out May 5th.
The trailer looked good.
Yeah, it looks cool. Resident Evil 7 was amazing. This looks like more of that.
More first-person Resident Evil.
Yeah, but this time with Big Vampire Lady.
Big Vampire Lady.
And she was in the new trailer, too.
And some of the camera movements very much were highlighting the fact that she was a very big, tall, very big, tall vampire lady.
She does
lady.
The blood suck this
she
time.
Does, yes.
She does the suck.
Yeah. There's werewolves.
Yeah, apparently there's werewolves. It looks like there was some kind of lake monster.
There was
maybe.
A lake monster. So is this Universal Monsters Resident Evil?
It might be. And I'm okay with that.
That's fine. I don't, you know, I'll be honest, I don't have much of attachment to this game franchise, but this looks all right. Looks good.
I mean, after having, you know, crazy cults and diseases and, you know, 100 games of zombies, all right.
There's some vampires and werewolves in there.
Sure.
I didn't realize how much I do like Resident Evil till recently, because I like 7. The remake of 2 is really, really good. The remake of 3 is pretty good. Like,
yeah, yeah.
It's a good series.
Yeah. There's a streamer that talks about Resident Evil, like, near constantly.
Is it the Sphere Hunter?
Sphere Hunter, yeah. Like, that's like 90% of her...
She's always playing Resident Evil.
Always, yeah. She also looks kind of like Jill Valentine a little bit.
Yeah.
But I've got
her followed on the Nerd Overload Twitch account, which I've actually been using a lot.
I have been too, yeah. But no, the trailer looks really good. Looking forward to the demo, and we'll see if it plays as good as it looks, I guess. All right, well, hey, with that, actually, before we wrap up, it looks like Duke Nukem has come back in. Duke, I thought you had... That's weird.
A little early.
Yeah. I thought you had gone to your friend's birthday party.
I've been banned from Dave and Buster's.
Oh man.
Oh, bummer. Bummer.
Oh man.
Yeah. So you came back here then. Okay. Thanks, Duke.
Duke nuke them, everybody.
Duke nuke them, everybody.
I'm Duke nuke them.
Thanks, yeah, we know,
thanks,
buddy.
Thanks, Duke. All right, we've actually hit time, so let's go ahead and wrap things up. You've been listening to Nerd Overload. Thank you all for tuning in. You can find us each and every day over at nerdoverload.com.
You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, and Instagram at Nerd Overload Now.
You can send us an email at staff@nerdoverload.com, or you can give us a call on the Nerd Overload hotline, 586-372-8020. Leave a message and we might play it on the show.
That's right. You can also find all of our back episodes on various podcast apps such as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and more. And finally, I'd like to thank David Pencil for the use of our intro and outro. You can find more of his stuff over at davidpencil.com. So again, thank you all for tuning in, and we will be back next week.
I'm King Baby. Gotta hail me.